You're listening to Human Rights Talks, organized by the Montreal Institute for Genocide and Human Rights Studies.
Welcome to the new series of discussions on international security, hosted by MIGS on X Spaces. This second episode focuses on China's foreign interference, including its driving factors, Beijing's meddling in Canadian elections, the intimidation of the Chinese diaspora, and potential solutions for protecting democratic nations against this threat. The experts featured in this discussion are Sheng Shui, a human rights activist and journalist, and Sam Cooper, an investigative journalist and founder of the Bureau News. This panel is moderated by Kyle Matthews, the executive director of MIGS.
So I'm going to get started. We're really, really pleased today to host this discussion on safeguarding democracy, exposing China's foreign interference. I'm joined today by two people that I admire for their work and their courage. I follow them on Twitter, and they've really helped me understand, and our institute understand, what's happening in Canada and internationally. I mentioned Chinese foreign interference is rocking and impacting Canada's democracy. It's been all over our news feeds for the past couple of months, but we're also seeing this issue come up in other parts of the world. And just this week, we saw at the British Parliament, two people who have been arrested for spying for China. We've seen similar things happen in Germany from the far-right AfD party that had ties to China for spying with them. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're beginning to get a global picture of what's happening. And the reason that we're hosting this event today, this discussion, and it's taking place thanks to the support of the Konrad Adenauer Stiftung. We're hosting a bunch of Twitter space discussions in the lead up to the Montreal International Security Summit, which will take place in October of 2024. And this year we're going to focus on China and the Indo-Pacific to help Canadians and our international partners understand strategically what's happening and why we have to be a little bit more on top of things to protect our democracy, to protect human rights, but also to guarantee our national interests. So with that being said, I would like to jump right into the questions. And I'm going to start off with one for Sam Cooper. Sam, can you outline the key findings of your investigative reporting on foreign interference in Canadian elections? And I'd like you to talk also about why have political leaders ignored or minimized the extent of the threat?
Sure. So starting with what I found, it's important to say that people that have followed my work since I was in British Columbia realize I was digging into illicit finance networks and how I discovered that international organized crime was being used in something which is called the Chinese Communist Party United Front Work Department and its networks around the world. So how that relates to what I found in Chinese election interference in recent years in Canada is that people with governmental information in Canada knew that I understood these networks, especially in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. And I was informed of how these United Front networks were very central to China's interference plans in Canada. Everyone here knows that a big part of this story is the so-called CCP police stations and how China has installed, you know, bricks and mortar operations in Canadian cities that are used to essentially implant unofficially or officially Chinese security officials that are there to harass and instill fear in diaspora communities, to the point where people could fear that they might be renditioned back to China if there's someone that China fears or wants to recover. Someone could fear violence in their Canadian communities. Someone could even fear going to the polls and voting for someone that China doesn't want. So I believe the CCP police stations are a big unreported part of the story as it refers directly to election interference and clandestine funding of certain candidates, attacks on others, people like MP Michael Chan. But in a nutshell, what I found was allegedly Beijing had clandestinely from at least the 2019 election been funding interference networks, which in sophisticated ways would support candidates that Beijing wanted in office in Canada. And I think people have followed the story very closely. Really why it matters here, if we go to the top line question, why is Beijing interfering in Canada? Why, you know, were they interfering in German Parliament? Why are they allegedly hiring staffers in UK Parliament? They want to gather inside intelligence from our politicians to essentially help them calibrate their plans. And I think we're on the point of, some people say Cold War, hybrid war, on the verge of, very unfortunately, a hot war that could bring Beijing into action. So Beijing wants to parcel off weaker links in Western democracy like Canada away from stronger players like the United States, Australia, United Kingdom, Germany. That's why we're seeing, you know, this is why Germany's parliament would be attacked. And why are Canadian officials downplaying or minimizing that some political parties appear to be, or evidently are supported by Beijing because they have a softer attitude towards Beijing's world plans? Well, the answer is in my last sentence. If you're being supported by Beijing and your opponents are being attacked, strategically it will make sense that you don't want stories about that coming out.
Thanks, Sam. I'd like to now turn to Shang Shuai. Shang, how vulnerable is Canada's Chinese diaspora to intimidation and threats from Beijing? And I'm wondering if you could talk about your own experience and that of the Federation for a Democratic China.
Yes, I came to Canada right after the Tiananmen massacre in 1989. I arrived here August 20th. And I involved in the overseas Chinese democracy movement after 20 days I got here. Yes, the CCP's interference in Canada, you know, must silence those who expose them. So what I have been doing, of course, made them very angry and even very scared. So the CCP has a lot of action on me, and they have many people attacks and smear on me, against me, and even someone was standing in front of our apartment building for 5 months in winter from November of 2015 to 2016, April, that calling for Canadian politicians to against me, as he accused me as a China spy. And then I went to police stations four times that police didn't know what they can do. And I went to the police station in Ottawa, just very close to the parliament building, that the police called him to talk to him, and then he went to the court, sued me for killing his cousin and asking for $10 million Canadian dollars. So this is what I have been experiencing, and of course it's 100 times more. I don't have time to explain here. That is when, you know, especially when our government, when Canadian government is standing beside the Chinese tyrannies, that to announce the two country has the strategic relationship, that makes people, especially makes the Chinese community, to misunderstand that China, the Chinese communist regime, is a good friend of Canada. And then people will try to do much more than what they can do, and to be good friends, and to have trust, and to have whatever business, and even to help the Chinese party to, you know, to engage in our different levels and our fields, and even to make the connection for them. That is means that people feel that the infiltration from China is welcomed by our government. So that was the situation for the past 30 years. And of course, for us, naturally be ignored or even being punished by the community, because from the government to the community and to the people's level, that when we are, you know, fighting against the Chinese communist regime, it's not welcome, even in Canada.
Thank you, Shang, for giving us that testimony of your experience. I'd like to ask you both, Sam, you talked a bit about China's global plans, but I'd like to know, what are the main factors driving China's foreign interference efforts in North America and the European Union? Is it ideology, economic interest, national security, military interest? I'm wondering if you could talk about some of these other topics. Shang, Sam, I'm not sure who wants to go first.
I can jump in, or I think it leads from my last answer. As Shen says, this has been active in Canada for 30 years. So, at different times, Shen may agree. You know, different priorities for Beijing rise to the top. They can be national, international, or they could be local issues in various Canadian ridings where Beijing is running United Front networks and attempting to promote, you know, nominees in various ridings. And by the way, this goes across all main parties. Some parties are more favored by others, and the evidence shows it's the Liberal Party that has been deeply pushing a deep trade and engagement agenda. And that's, you know, a three-hour conversation of exactly who is behind that, what industrialists, what politicians. But suffice to say, industrialists in countries such as Canada and Germany are very important to China's plans to influence senior Canadian political leaders. And as I said, I believe right now, very unfortunately, again, we're looking at the potential of a world or a regional wars that could connect, you know, what we can see as NATO. This is the democratic strong nations with what we call the anti-NATO, or I do, Iran, Russia, China. And so really the issue, I don't think we can ignore this point. The issue is Beijing wants to divide Canada from the United States and our historical intelligence allies. But you cannot separate how Beijing would have been deeply interested in having the Huawei 5G network run in Canada and other countries, and would be making every effort trying to influence our senior politicians to make sure that Huawei is running Canada, because that would support Beijing's future, you know, plans by 2049 to be the world, you know, dominant hegemon, or the leader in artificial intelligence, the leader in 5G. So I've kind of given a broad range, and I'll be quiet now. But I do think, you know, ideology, economic interest, military, national security, and very importantly, the efforts to intimidate Chinese diasporas in other nations are all aimed at protecting the regime in Beijing, its continuity, and its plans to be the world's leader.
Thanks, Sam. Shang, I'd like to get your thoughts on this based on your experience.
Yeah, in case to ask, what do the Chinese communists want? That the CCP wants two things, naturally, not only from Canada, but from the whole world. The CCP's highest interest groups want to get all the benefits from democratic countries and to destroy the democratic countries at the same time. The global interference and by the CCP are by its nature. Our Prime Minister Trudeau has always tried to avoid facing the interference from China, because Trudeau himself has many fantasy thinking about communism that CCP knows it very well. And the goal of the Chinese communist regime is to eliminate all private aspects, including individuals' thoughts, beliefs, ideas, positions, wealth, property, or ability, and even emotions. So the communist seeks to emulate all private rights, and it wants to control everyone and everything. In its effort to achieve this goal, the CCP has eliminated about 100 million people in China. And the Chinese government aims to realize this ideal throughout the world. That's why China has been always trying to do the interference to democratic countries. And maybe people think that it's different from like from Deng Xiaoping or to Jiang Zemin, Hu Jintao, or to Xi Jinping. During the Mao Zedong's era, the Chinese Communist Party declared that they want to liberate all the humanity and to plant the flag, the red flag across the globe. And then Mao Zedong's generation, they did a lot of this kind of things to achieve their goal. And even when China was so poor, extreme poor, and the China gave a lot of support to countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America in order to enable international communist alliance that Mao Zedong wanted to be the leader of the communist world. And Xi Jinping often says that he wants to promote a community of shared future for mankind globally, which in Chinese is 人类命运共同体. This goal is the same thing as Mao Zedong's. So the CCP has never stopped interference. They do buying and dismantling, causing trouble and destroying free democratic countries. And the situation we face today is the result of what the CCP has continued to do over the past few decades. However, the leaders of the Chinese Communist Party no longer believe in communism, but they become maxed enjoyer of all the good systems in the world. So we have seen that China has become a very complicated and contradictory body. And the CCP leaders between Mao Zedong and Xi Jinping were even more smart, especially Deng Xiaoping. They decided to use Western attitude and method to deal with the Western countries, the Western world, making the Western world misunderstanding by believing that the CCP wanted to neutralize into the camp of freedom and democracy. And Xi Jinping has no ability to cover up this, and he is very arrogant and stupid. So he believes that China is already the world's second largest economic body, and China can surpass the United States and defeat the Western democracies. And he can surpass Mao Zedong and become the boss of the world. So today, many countries are beginning to deal with the CCP's interference. And because of Xi Jinping, his ability and his character makes the world realize what the Chinese communist has been doing, that we have the chance to talk about this today. Thank you.
Thank you. For those who are listening in, please, if you haven't, please follow Sam and Chang on Twitter. They're important voices to follow to understand what's happening in Canada and globally. I'd like to now turn and just, we talked a bit about some of the different methods used by Beijing, but I'm wondering, in the Canadian context, who are the main actors? Is it consulates, elected officials, student groups, or all of the above? I'm just trying to get a picture of what actors are being activated to put pressure in Canada. Sam, could you maybe give us an overview?
Sure. I have very good insight into that. What I learned from sources with awareness of efforts in the past few elections is, you know, and I can't take full credit, because Charles Burton will tell me and he will tell others that he has observed this objectively and anecdotally for years, that the Chinese missions and consulates, so these are the, you know, Vancouver, Calgary, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, they are packed full of undercover Chinese intelligence operatives. These are not diplomatic facilities. These are hives of Chinese security agents who are every day in plain sight. Some of the major ones are you know, interacting with community leaders who are called proxies in leaked CSIS records. But I think people that in the community, that is, you know, the Asian diaspora that follow, know that these community proxies are feared individuals, whether they're running, you know, purportedly grocery stores, they're real estate developers, other, you know, allegedly legitimate businesses. As a matter of fact, they're running underground casinos, human trafficking, weapons trafficking, and many other illicit activities. So they, what I'm suggesting here is they have a fear factor in the community. They have a covert economic and clandestine election interference funding capacity, and they are able to travel over to Beijing and you know, be in United Front Work Department meetings, getting face, as they say, with Xi Jinping. And so I'll end my answer by saying that if we were in the United Kingdom, we would have, you know, I believe certain community leaders in Vancouver and Toronto could be listed in, you know, if we had an MI5 that was permitted by, you know, an equivalent, let's just call it the Prime Minister's Office in Canada, if they let CSIS do a public alert or burn notice, we would have some very feared and important leaders in Canada. The world would know about them, but we don't. So I'm saying that intelligence agents in consulates are running community leaders who are in their own right very powerful organized crime bosses who can run students who are parts of student associations in universities. And those are some, let's just call it, those are the big three actors. Let's not forget politicians, but I won't get into names of politicians particularly right now.
Thank you. Chang, I'd like to just to have you get your thoughts or your experience on this.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, all Chinese government agencies in Canada have the responsibility to assist CCP's interference. The nature of the Communist Party requires that the CCP members may be required to provide service for the goals of the CCP. Since China is an extreme terrorist tyrant, no one is truly free, and anyone could be a tool for the CCP, which enables the CCP's plans and the needs to be realized on a large scale. The CCP's interference in democratic countries is achieved through thousands of individuals. So everyone who served the CCP can contribute their intelligence and abilities. Therefore, the CCP's means and method of intervening in democratic countries like in Canada are also very diverse and effective. What we often see is that there is nothing the CCP cannot do except what you cannot imagine. The problem we are facing now is that the CCP has high technology and they have a very accurate understanding of the goals and the targeted persons, which greatly improves the CCP's ability to intervene. In Canada, of course, there is a large number of Chinese community. It's close to 2 million. And many of them, or the large amount of them, are very, very scared and threatened from even they are here, even they left China, maybe many years, but the Chinese government is massed to control whoever they need to. And especially those people are being the bridges and the tools to connect with our Canadian community and all levels. And of course, especially the politicians group. So it's very hard, but first, we need to make people to understand, and especially to make politicians to understand the situation, and especially the nature of the Chinese Communist Party. Thank you.
Thank you. I see this, the Foreign Interference Commission has really exposed what's going on, and I see more Canadians concerned about this at all different levels of society. And I guess the final question I'd like to ask you both is given the scope of this problem and challenge, is that how should the Canadian government or other authorities across the world, how should they better protect individuals who are the victims of transnational repression and protect our democratic system from this kind of foreign influence? Like, what are a couple things that we should be doing that we're not? You talked about the UK. I'm wondering if you have some more you can expand on that.
I'd like Shan to go first, since she has such experience with being, her community being the target.
Jing, the floor is yours.
Thank you. As I experienced a lot of attacks and harassed and threatening that I reported to police many times, and I contact with RCMP and the CCs and many times, but it seems that those departments lack of understanding of the CCP. Most of the time and the way I will be told that, oh, there seems that not much we can do. And even when my telephone number was published online and on newspapers and on the categories, saying that I provide sex service, that was before the 25th anniversary of Tiananmen massacre that I was in charge of to prepare for the anniversary's events, that I went to police station and the police officer suggest me to change my phone number. And he said that was the only thing that he can do. And of course, I'm not the only one to face this kind of situation. There are more and more people from Tibetans, Uyghurs, Hong Kongers, and even from Taiwan, they are facing the same situation. So we do need our government and our different departments to know the CCP better. And also we need our government and our MPs to stand clearly on the freedom and the democracy, human rights side, not to show their attitude, to be engaged with the Chinese communist too close. And, this can be a very, very bad misunderstanding for the whole society. And what we are facing is pretty dangerous. As Sam said too, and the Chinese communists try to control our, our elections. What is that? It's try to change the democracy's the basis of our country. So we do need to make this much louder and louder to make most people can hear the sounds. And thank you for having this, the Twitter space talking, and this is very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to, Sam, I'd like you to maybe just give you a turn to answer that question, just to get some ideas about what more could be done. I think that's the key thing here.
Sure. And I would concur absolutely with what Sean said, that the community has been steadfastly reporting and warning to RCMP and CSIS for, I think, decades now, that they are fearful of Chinese agents and transnational repression activities in the community. And further than that, not only have they been reporting, even before the Foreign Interference Commission, I had sourcing that said the RCMP at senior levels knew about the Chinese police station networks way back in and around 2010. But, officers that were very tied into the diaspora community, very understanding of these threats I talk about, that is the CCP and organized crime, wanted to tackle this. And whatever people tell you that the RCMP is independent or CSIS is independent, I'm sorry that, my sources that actually know how the world works say, no, it's not. You need approval from the Prime Minister and his office to tackle some of these very high-level issues. And I won't ramble on here, but the Interference Commission, whatever the result, it's being watched around the world, and it's been very helpful. I moderated a panel with Honorable Tony Abbott, the former Prime Minister of Australia. He said, kudos to Canada, a lot of crucial information has come out. And one of those pieces of information, I think this is very illustrative, and I'll end my answer here. It's a memo from Justin Trudeau's National Security Advisor, Daniel Jean. It was from 2017. And the memo says essentially what Shun just told us. That is that the transnational repression is happening. It's dangerous. Our diaspora communities are attacked. However, Mr. Jean, in his memo, said, dealing with this at a high level will cause great friction with Beijing, and this could call trade and other issues into question. And so there's your answer. Look, if Canada wants to tackle this, we could have had laws back in 2019. We can have laws. I would think within months after this commission, laws could be tabled to put us beside Australia, United States. We won't put up with transnational attacks on our citizens, and we will have an agent registry. We will have criminal code amendments that will send proxies of the Chinese state to jail. And, I could go on and on, but that's a very key fix. And look, Australia already has these laws. UK has these laws. We can go into those books and write up something for Canada within days. As a matter of fact, these laws are already being pretty much written up, as I know, in the Justice Department and Public Safety Canada. All it takes is the political will.
Yeah, I think that's it. I'm left after this discussion just knowing that the political will and political leadership is the key point, and it doesn't seem to be emerging anywhere. Listen, I want to thank Sheng Zhui and Sam Cooper. Thank you for joining us. This was such a deep, fascinating discussion, a worrisome one, but I think we need to have these discussions more and more to let Canadians know what's going on, and hopefully we'll see a change in this. And I just want to thank you for taking time to join us today.